Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Professor Eileen Marty is a physician with more than 40 years of clinical and research work in the fields of infectious disease and public health. And we're very happy that she makes time for us here every week. And Eileen, I don't know about you, but this is getting to me. Last night, I actually had a dream that I was interviewing you about the virus.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I need help. I understand, and I know you do, the feeling business owners and employees have right now about opening the country. People are desperate. But when you look at the numbers, what do they tell you about what happens in states where governors have loosened regulations, perhaps, not really in line with the guidelines of the White House? Is it too soon to tell?
Well, it's very tricky, Bob, because there's a lot of different models, and they all have different assumptions within the models. And most of the models that people are looking at are making the assumptions that we do not lift restrictions, right? And if you and so that looks, those are more hopeful models. Some really interesting data came my way yesterday showing how the reproductive number has been brought down in a number of states. For example, the state that I live in here in Florida, overall, what we're looking at, and it's, again, these models have a lot of assumptions in them, is that we are below one right now. But the problem is the virus is still out there, and that model says it'll stay below one if we keep things as they are for at least another, week or two, at an absolute minimum. And we would very much like to open up. We would very, very much like to open up, but we need to do it with the citizenry taking responsibility. And that's the challenge right there. Can we set up systems, Bob, where individuals know that yes, they can go out, yes, they can open certain businesses in certain new normal way, if you will, and will people adhere to these ideas? That's the challenge. If they do, we'll be able to open up sooner. If we see that they don't, then and we see this also in these models, Bob, for different states, where some states tried to open up, or they had rallies, and their numbers went right back up. So because they weren't keeping the social distancing when they opened up or when they had these protestations like they did. So it's a matter of opening with care and with responsible citizens.
I heard about an experiment at Florida International University where they tested how far coughs can spread the virus droplets. Were you part of that research?
Actually, the study that has been published on that is from MIT, and it showed that the cough clouds could go as far as 27 feet.
27 feet, but that's not likely, is it?
Actually, it's not an uncommon phenomenon for a cough cloud to go a significant distance. But remember, the big problem with this virus is not the people who, in terms of spread, is the people who are asymptomatic. There's more and more data coming in now, Bob, showing that we have our highest viral loads in our upper respiratory system before we're symptomatic than after, because after you start to have symptoms, the place where the virus is accumulating is deeper down in the lungs and other organs, and not so much in the upper respiratory area where we are likely to shed virus. So the person coughing is pretty sick, and we are less likely to encounter the virus that way than we are from an asymptomatic patient, a person who's just walking about and doesn't know they're sick.
Can you clear up the confusion about what will happen later this year in the fall and in the winter with the virus and with the regular flu after hearing the president and the CDC and Dr. Fauci? I don't know what to think now. What's the best guess as to what's going to happen in the winter?
So, it depends on whether we open up or not, right? And it depends, because here's the thing you have to consider. Respiratory infections in general, whether they're caused by viruses or bacteria, pretty much are mostly shared the same way, by contact with contaminated surfaces, by shaking hands, and by respiratory droplets, right? So what we already know is that people who are dual infected with any of these are worse off than if you have any one of the respiratory infections. And we could be talking about flu. We could be talking about a bacterial pneumonia. We could be talking about respiratory syncytial virus. And we're definitely talking about COVID. So that's one part of the problem. The second part of the problem is, suppose you have any one of those diseases, they have similar symptoms. And so it becomes harder to distinguish who has what. And that's a problem. So if we relax ourselves too much, then we're going to be spreading all the respiratory pathogens to one another, potentially having people with dual infections, which are much harder to treat, and potentially just having a huge confusion as to who has what, and you will have COVID cases on top of influenza cases, and influenza is a big problem every year. What can we do to minimize that? One of the things is a huge get your flu vaccine campaign, and you and I have spoken about how important it is to get the flu vaccine, not because it directly affects COVID, but because it indirectly does. And it certainly indirectly does. And don't forget, COVID is one of those diseases where the virus decreases your immunity to other things. So that's part of the problem. And so it becomes really, really serious that we have some new normal where we don't shake hands anymore. That's definitely, that should go out the window. And we find a way to open up society without increasing our transmission risk for these respiratory pathogens. And in the meantime, every respiratory pathogen for which we do have a vaccine, like pneumococcus vaccine for the bacteria and the influenza vaccine for the flu, should definitely be used by the population, because the last thing you want is to have these things on top of each other and have tremendous problems in our hospital with people dying of mixed infections or any one of these diseases.
And do I have this right? There's still no vaccine for SARS or MERS. So is the way, is that why you're working so hard on drug therapy? Is that the best, quickest solution to get us out of this, not the vaccine, because that's still so far down the road?
Well, everyone's working on every possible front at the same time. That's really what we're doing. But in lieu of having a vaccine, which is complicated for this virus, you're absolutely right. We're focused right now on doing a clinical trial using one of the potential antivirals as a post-exposure, which I know that sounds like a lot of science, but really what we're just saying is somebody who gets is definitely negative and then has a reason that we know they've been exposed to somebody who's positive for COVID. We take some measurements of their blood and make sure they're asymptomatic. And meanwhile, we give some people one of these antivirals and some other people a placebo and see what the difference is in terms of viral load and illness in the two populations. That's what we're doing now to see if that's going to work. And we're very hopeful about it. Oh, by the way, I should mention that I forgot to mention earlier, the Illinois, which is where you live, the reproductive number dropped a lot in the beginning of, towards the end of March, and then it started to pick up again. So you're at about 1.12 right now.
Well, we'll try to stay healthy. Professor, thanks as always, Dr. Eileen Marty. No offense, but tonight I hope I don't dream about interviewing you again.
Have a nice, safe evening.
Oh, you too. Thanks.